Hey, this is Scott Ardella, author of The Edge of Strength, now available on Amazon, and you're listening to the Ardella Training Podcast, the strength and performance podcast for the serious fitness enthusiast. Now, let's get started with this week's show. Hey guys, if you're a coffee aficionado like me, I've got a great tasting high performance coffee recommendation. As a matter of fact, I just ordered my new batch prior to recording this. This is seriously one of the best coffee brews I've ever had, and once you try it, you're guaranteed to love it. That coffee is the Renegade Roast. It's a clean coffee bean, pesticide and chemical free, tastes exceptionally great. It's a high performance coffee endorsed by Men's Health, Muscle and Fitness, and many more fitness brands and professionals. And the coffee has a partnership with Generosity.org, so you're providing clean drinking water to those in need, which is fantastic. My preferred blend, which tastes awesome, is the Light Roast. You can go to RenegadeRoastingCo.com/Scott, and you can save 25% on your first order and have it delivered to your door right now. I guarantee you'll love this coffee, and if you don't, they'll give you your money back. Better brew, better you. Again, go to RenegadeRoastingCo.com/Scott. Check it out, guys. All right, guys, what's up? Welcome to episode number 177. This week, my guest is wellness expert Josh Trent, who has a unique approach to digital health. And you'll hear and learn all about that in this interview session. And we're going to get right into the interview in just a minute. Before we do, I just wanted to tell you a little bit about something I just came back from. I am just back from the Perform Better Summit in Orlando, Florida. And not only did I get to meet a lot of really cool people, a lot of great people, listeners to the Ardella Training Podcast, but I also heard from some outstanding presenters, some of the guys that are the best in the industry. I'm talking about guys like Gray Cook, Dr. Stuart McGill, Charlie Weingroff, Martin Rooney, Nick Winkelman, and so many more. Guys, this event was just packed with great speakers and some amazing presentations. Learned a lot, actually. And I can't promise this, but I may do a show in the near future where I share some of my takeaways and learnings from the Perform Better Summit. If you haven't been to one of these three-day summits, I highly recommend it. I had been to a Perform Better event in the past. This was my first three-day summit, and it was really, really great. But not to take away from this interview, because again, I could share a lot of information about that, but I may do a future show and talk a little bit more about it and tell you more about my takeaways and learnings. And keep this in mind, no matter where you are in your journey, always be a student. There's a great quote, and that quote is, "Experts are students first and always." And I fully agree with that. It's just a great quote and really stuck with me when I heard that. All right. As usual, if you like the Ardella Training Podcast, please take a minute and drop in a 5-star review in iTunes. We would be so grateful if you did that. And it really does help the show grow and be found. All right. Let me tell you about Josh Trent. And by the way, we are both speaking at a conference this August up in Boston. You can learn all about that event by checking out the show notes for episode number 177 on ardellatraining.com. So make sure to check out the show notes for this episode at ardellatraining.com. So Josh Trent is the founder of wellnessforce.com. He is the host of Wellness Force Radio. He's been named one of the top 50 digital health influencers in 2015. He is a digital health coach with over 10 years in the health, fitness, and wellness industry. And his vision is to empower greater wellness in over 1 million lives through technology by teaching his digital health as an integrative life practice. With national accreditation from multiple fitness organizations and with over 10 years of high level experience in the health and fitness industry, Josh provides content for multiple fitness and digital health publications. This is a unique interview and certainly a different topic than things that we've talked about here in the past, but I think it'll help to really shed some light on how he approaches health, fitness. I think you'll learn some new things here and think about what you can take away from this interview, what practical application you can have from Josh's story and the insights that Josh shares here today. So with that, let's jump into the interview this week with Josh Trent. Enjoy. All right. Josh Trent of wellnessforce.com joins the show today. Josh, thank you so much for being here. And as always, we're going to jump right into the interview session. So let's start with your story and how you got into the fitness industry. Tell us a little bit about yourself as we get going here.
Scott, so pumped to be on the show. Thanks for having me on, man.
Absolutely.
My story started, honestly, when I was a little kid. I mean, I did not get the proper nutritional and or physiological tool sets from my parents that I think I really needed back then. So I had this life of kind of obesity, right? Adolescent obesity, a lot of emotional eating when I was an adolescent just to kind of deal with stress. So if anybody listening can relate to this, I mean, food was kind of a thing that I did to numb out. So to no surprise, you know, I'm 22 years old and I'm 280 pounds and I'm like, okay, I can't do this anymore. Like I knew there was, I had this intuitive force inside me that was like, you know, there's more to life than feeling bad all the time. And so I'll never forget this, Scott. What really got me into fitness was I was drinking one night and I was at a party and I was just feeling bad and using alcohol as a way to numb out. And I put down the cup and I ran home drunk for like 3 miles. And by the time I got home, I was so frustrated with the way I felt in my body that I started doing research. You know, how do you lose weight? How do you become healthy? So just kind of this vision that I had for myself where I'd feel better was birthed through feeling the pain of how comfortable I was in my body. So I left everything I knew. I moved to Hawaii. I sold all my possessions, took 10 grand and went to Hawaii. I started fishing and hiking and surfing and just learning about what it was to be healthy. And I was working out at a 24-hour fitness. I'd played high school football and I was doing some lifting. And the fitness manager came up to me one day and he said, hey, you should think about being a trainer. I've watched you work out. And I said, what's a trainer? I didn't even know what a trainer was back then. This is 2003. And so I found out about this world of fitness, this empowering world, this line of improving your life that I was already walking myself, kind of birthed through pain, you know, kind of birthed through that early adolescent period where I wasn't getting what I needed. Well, at this time, it was so exciting because I thought, oh my gosh, this is a career that I can actually use to catalyze my own health and then help people do the same. And for the next 10 years, I mean, that was it. You know, I ran small teams and I was a trainer and then I worked in a studio and then I transitioned into my business, which is wellnessforce.com. And I think really like what I'm excited about now is stemming back on my 10 years of being shoulder to shoulder with clients in the gyms and using that knowledge more in a digital and virtual health coaching capacity, using this new technology, these wearables, these applications to have people show up more powerful, you know, in the way they work out and the way they sleep and the way they eat and drink. So that's kind of me in a couple minutes.
All right. So for lack of a better word, I guess, did you ever have any kind of relapses in that 10-year time period when you had this kind of moment where you realized you had to make a change and then you sold all your belongings, you went to Hawaii, but did you ever have any periods where you kind of reverted back to that person that you were?
Yeah, absolutely. Because the real work that I got to do was the emotional work. And I know that we talk a lot about in the fitness industry about, you know, calories in, calories out, and doing the work to actually let go of the old weight. But in my opinion, you know, from working with clients in the gyms and out, it's the emotional work that we all get to do that really allows us to let go of the weight or to gain the muscle we want. And that was what happened to me. You know, 2012, I got so burnt out with coaching clients. And I'm sure you can relate to this, you know, working with people so many hours, understanding that you really want the best for them. But in order to be a successful trainer, you got to be in the gym. I mean, you got to get your butt in the gym. You got to be there at 5 a.m. You get a little break in the afternoon and you're there from 3 to 7 at night. And then you're all over again for the next 5-6 days. And that's what happened to me at the end of 2012. I was so burnt out, Scott. Right. That I actually put myself into stage 3 adrenal fatigue. So I had cortisol dysregulation. I had oxidative stress. I had a lot of stuff going on. And I started to think, well, maybe this isn't for me. You know, maybe coaching and training isn't in my bag because I was putting on weight, but I was eating and exercising, but something just wasn't working. Right. So I quit. I mean, I allowed kind of the negativity in my brain to push me into a software sales industry. I was in the endurance sports industry. Looking back though, it was a gift. I mean, I was able to learn so many ways about technology that I actually use now, but that was the most major relapse in 2012 where I just took a complete step out of the fitness industry. I wasn't working with any clients anymore because I was honestly just broken. And what I learned though, to kind of cap it here, is that I learned that the emotional work that I got to do, you know, some limiting beliefs and some things that happened when I was a kid, and kind of the reason why I used food to numb out anyways when I was a kid, that's the stuff that I got to go through and get stronger from. And then that led me to, in 2014, getting back into what I'm doing now and just, you know, feeling really connected and really blessed and grateful to be able to be working with people.
All right. So let's talk about this, this digital health component. So first of all, explain, what is digital health?
Digital health is devices and applications that can help people show up more powerfully in the way that they live their life. So digital health is a pretty broad umbrella. You know, it includes wearables, apps, devices, software, hardware. Think of it as anything at all that's digitally based that can help people be more healthy. So that can include a lot of different things, you know, home sensors, bracelets on the wrists, Fitbit, Atlas trackers for strength training, body fat measurements, a lot of different pieces that are in the health and wellness industry. But digital health really is all of those things. It's anything digital that's connected to our health and wellness.
Do you think we can get too hung up in the technology, in the digital aspect at all?
Yeah. I mean, now when you say we can get hung up, do you mean like the strength and the fitness community?
Yes. Yes.
I think so. I think everybody's always looking for the next shiny gem. But the reality is that the fundamentals, the four basics, you know, eating, sleeping, moving, and hydration, those aren't going to change. Like, we get to focus on those always. And I think people are always looking for how we can make those easier. So I feel like the technology is great, but really, you know, Scott, it's the intention behind the technology that's honestly worth more than the technology itself.
Okay. So give us some examples of some of the specifics, some of the essential apps or technology tools that you use.
So I have a partnership with a company called Nudge Coach. And Nudge Coach is this awesome system that I think a lot of coaches and trainers are getting used to now. I've been using it for the past year. And what it allows me to do is read any wearable that's made. So they build kind of cool term. It's called APIs. So anybody that might be in the technology sector, it's just this way for computers to talk to each other. So on my side as a coach, I can see everything my client's doing in the ways that I discussed before, those four pillars of health. And that way, whenever I have a coaching session with them, we can have some very specific and non kind of quasi, I guess you could say, like, you know, these pieces where you talk to a client and you're like, hey, Jane Smith, how was your week? And Jane doesn't know, she's so busy. So we get to get away from these anecdotal conversations. And I think that's been really powerful for me to use Nudge Coach. I use Fitbit products predominantly. I feel like Fitbit, you know, kind of the grandfather in the wellness and wearable space. And I feel like they do the best job. But I'll tell you, Garmin is doing a great job as well. And so is Jawbone with their sleep tracking units there. So those are the pieces that I see the most in my practice. But it all makes sense to read it off of a dashboard. And that's what I do with Nudge Coach.
Okay. Let's talk about the four pillars of health again. So if you could review those and then maybe dive down into why those four.
Yeah, because, you know, this is at a very basal level. We have certain things that we must do in order to survive. You know, two of those are eating and drinking. So those are the two right away. Right. And the first one being hydration. You know, what is the amount of hydration for my clients and how are we timing that hydration? And then secondly, what is their nutrients? You know, what kind of energy is coming into the system? What's their nutrient density? The third one, being their sleep. The reason why sleep is so incredibly powerful is because there's a lot of hormonal dysregulation that happens when sleep quality is off. So that's why sleep is number three. And then the last, you know, is really looking at their movement. How are they training? What are they doing? Not just in the gym, but what are they doing for their movement breaks? You know, their joint capacity and they're nourishing all the things that are going on in their body from a physicality perspective. The reason those four are the most important is because those are the ones that we can quantify. It's really hard, Scott, to quantify emotion. You know, it's hard to really put things in a box and say, well, I feel this way and this is kind of what my life looks like.
Talk about how you quantify sleep. And I'm not the technology guy with my approach and what I do. So this is a great learning session for me. So talk about quantifying sleep.
Yeah. So looking at movement, when you have a device on your wrist or there's a device for the bed, it's called Bedit. It's going to track your movement. So we know that if you cross-reference your movement while you're sleeping to a heart rate monitor, then we can start looking at your cycles of REM sleep. If you're sleeping enough, then you're going to have a high quality of energy the next day. If you're not, it's challenging, right? It's challenging because there's a couple of things that go on hormonally too.
Josh, tell me a little bit more about the hormonal dysregulation with sleep? What hormones are affected? And
sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the reason why sleep is included in this pillar is because we have these kind of play between two key hormones in the body. One of them being leptin, one of them being ghrelin. So ghrelin is our hunger hormone. You know, it's what our body sends to our basal ganglia when we're excited to eat. We want to eat food. We want to have like nourishment. So ghrelin, if you're not sleeping enough, will increase. Leptin, that hormone that makes us feel satiety and full, that's going to go down. So this interplay between these two hormones, you know, it is such an epidemic right now, Scott, where we have this work hard, play hard mentality. And it's honestly hurting people because what's happening is you're getting people that have this hormonal imbalance through inadequate sleep. And that's making them eat too many calories. It's making them not show up powerfully at work. It's making their PRs go down in the gym. They got to get to bed. So that's why I track it.
Yeah. You know, sleep is such a fascinating discussion. And I had Sean Stevenson on the show recently talking about his book, Sleep Smarter. And there's so much there. And it's so important. It's like one of those things that's, I guess, underrated, maybe undervalued, missed a lot. So if people have their nutrition dialed in and their training dialed in, the sleep is kind of the thing that may not be optimized. So it's so important for so many health and performance reasons. So I'm going to ask you the same question I asked Sean. What would be your top strategies or tips to improve sleep habits?
I think it's in ritual, environment, and then what is your kind of session that you go into? How do you track it? So the ritual being, what is your nighttime ritual? Are you getting the proper blue light blocking from your eyes? Do you have screen time before bed? You know, the photoreceptors that are in our eyes, those upregulate cortisol. So it sends a message to your brain that says, stay awake. That's not healthy before we go to bed to have those screens in front of us. So low dim lighting, candle lights, proper temperature as well. I mean, I forget the exact temperature, but I think it's somewhere like 67, 68 degrees is optimal for sleep. The reason being is because at cooler temperatures, you'll have deeper REM. And then, you know, beyond that environment, you want to have a pitch dark black room. You don't want to have any light. You want to get the Wi-Fi router out of your room. You want to make sure that everything's covered in your window. Again, like, you know, your skin has those receptors as well. So if there's light shining on your body, even in small amounts, it's been proven in a lot of different studies to not give you that adequate environment for sleep, not letting you get into that deep sleep. So that's it for environment, you know, temperature, light, making sure that you're removing all the things that can emit radiation out of your room, things like that. And then also a way to track it. I think it's important to have this way to track your sleep. You know, how are you actually seeing how many times you're moving? Are you using a Fitbit? Are you using an app on your phone? Making sure that once you've set up your environment for success, once you have that ritual, you know, going to bed, no screen time, candles, things like that, then how are you going to quantify it? You know, how are you actually going to see if it's worth the investment you're making? I'll tell you it is, but beyond just trusting me, it's a good idea to track it.
Yeah, I think that, you know, you really nailed it in basically confirming things that Sean talked about. And to really simplify, just that environment is so key. And after reading his book, I made some changes that I talked about in that interview with him. And that is making my room cooler, number one, and then darker, number two. And just doing those two simple things alone, there's a couple other things I did as well, but those two things really contributed significantly.
What did you notice?
Better sleep. I mean, you know, I wasn't waking up as much. We actually had this kind of nightlight in our room from when our little girls were smaller. And we just, I don't know why, but neither myself or my wife took this thing out. So we had this nightlight blaring every night. And I'm like, oh my God, you know, this is like ridiculous. Why is this thing plugged in? So I unplugged it and immediately, obviously the room was a lot darker. And then I ended up turning down the AC unit a couple of degrees cooler for the reasons you mentioned, because the temperature should be within a certain range. And so I turned it down a lot cooler and it just made a huge difference. You know, for me, I need it really cold and I just found I was sleeping so much better, literally sleeping like a baby with those two things. So darker, cooler. And then, the other thing too that you mentioned is the blue light. So I was getting off the computer earlier before bed, you know, allowing a certain amount of time if I'm doing computer work, where, you know, I would get off earlier and do some reading or something where it was kind of winding down, going back to that ritual that you mentioned before bedtime.
So I think it's 65 degrees. I was looking at my notes from a previous client, and okay. It's 65 degrees is the optimal.
It's really cold, but I didn't turn it down that much. I mean, I think we're like 70, 72, which is, I'm telling you, it's cold for
got
us.
It. So especially with low body fat, right?
65 would be like Arctic, I think, for us. But so yeah, a couple degree difference made all the difference in the world. All right, let's shift gears a little bit. Let's talk about your approach to training, strength and conditioning. So how important is strength in your approach for you personally and then also with your clients, people that you work with?
Well, strength for me is part of a comprehensive approach. So I don't put all my eggs in one basket with strength, but it's fundamentally just irreplaceable when we look at holistic living. Holistics and wellness is a term that's thrown around. What I believe is just honestly, it's tying in the body, the mind, and the spirit. And the only way we're going to do that is if we use that fast twitch fiber in our body. I mean, we are designed, specifically myself, I did the 23andMe test, so I know I have the sprinter gene. We are designed, some of us more than others, to explode and to have short, really intense bouts of work capacity. And I feel the best when I strength train. I think it's just as important for my restorative, my yoga, my tissue work, all that's very important. But the way that I integrate my strength is that I typically work out on a 10 to 12 repetition or doing some type of maybe even lower if I'm going for a power curve. I'll work out every other day. I don't work out 7 days a week. I don't try to crush it every single day like that. I'm more in the alignment of balance for my personal life. But the way that I approach strength is, who are you and what are you trying to do? I think if we look at a mom's stress load and we look at parents' stress loads, you know, the gym is still stress. Now it might be you stress. It's not distress, but we still have to be cognizant of how hard we're pushing people in the gym setting. Right. And I apply that in my own life. You know, I don't have a template right now, but I just know my body from kind of training for so long, Scott,
sure,
that for me, it's an every other day type deal. And I usually keep the repetitions lower, I'll tell you, because I found that if I can move that heavier weight in lower repetition, that gives me the composition that I'm looking for more than if I'm just going into the 15 and 20 range.
Got it. What are your favorite tools, training modalities that you use the majority of time?
Well, the barbell is my best friend.
Okay, cool.
I mean, I like the barbell the most. I think there's really no greater test than the deadlift. You know, traditional strength training exercises like deadlifting and rows are phenomenal, pull-ups, regular pushing too. I really enjoy doing weighted push-ups or dumbbell presses. I have a shoulder impingement issue that I'm still working on. You know, I'm 36 years old and I'm still working on this issue. And I can't do a barbell bench. Even if I do mobility and tissue work and all these different flexibility pieces, I actually met with Anthony Carey at Function First. He's here in San Diego. So I got the pleasure of like meeting with him, and it's just something that I get to work on for a while, you know, really getting the health of the shoulder back up. But, you know, to answer your question, man, I think the barbell is in my opinion, one of the best tools that anyone could use.
Yeah. Totally agree with you on that one, brother. So what would you say to this question? Let's shift gears again and talk a little bit about nutrition here. So I'm curious as to what your answer would be for this. So the question is, Josh, I want to improve my nutrition. I feel confused and overwhelmed. Mm. What advice do you have? What should I do? And I'm asking you this because this is a question I got recently.
Mm-hmm. And it's a great question, isn't
it?
And it's so unique.
Yeah.
It's such a unique question. So immediately, and this is such a coach answer, but I would ask him, well, what are you trying to do? You
right.
know, are you trying to work on your body composition? Are you trying to let go of weight? Are you trying to gain muscle? I want to understand like who they are first.
Sure.
But typically it's going to be something around their mindset. It's going to be something around their hormonal status, or it's going to be around their exercise and activity and nutrition. So if they're saying, how do I eat better? I want to kind of see what they're eating like now. I would have them do probably 7 days. 3 days if they're really seasoned, but I think a 7-day window into how someone's eating through this application I'd mentioned, Nudge, is a great way to get a snapshot of how they're showing up. You know, if I know how they're showing up and the way that they fuel themselves, then it's interesting, by the act of tracking, a lot of athletes and just a lot of people in general find that they really weren't as healthy as they thought they were.
Yeah.
And it can be a little bit of a humbling moment, but you know what? The truth is undefeated. I mean, let's get people logging for 7 days just to get that snapshot. And then let's start tweaking it. The one thing that I'll say also to people that have that question of, well, how do I eat healthier? After we've gotten a sense of how you're eating and we start doing some tweaks, let's also get your hormones involved as well. Because a lot of people that might ask that question, Scott, they might have tried for years. I mean, they might have tried for 10 years, 20 years to get rid of weight. Meanwhile, they had this crazy vitamin deficiency or hormonal deficiency that was never addressed.
What advice would you have for sorting through that overwhelm or confusion? I was a little bit surprised by that when this person asked me that question. So how do you help people simplify the approach? And I totally understand what you're saying. I think that's a great starting point, is understand what they're doing, do the 7-day food journal. But what would be the key advice to simplify?
Yeah, honestly, eat foods that don't have a label on them.
Yes.
I mean, in one sentence, that would be the thing I would say. Just eat real food, all these different food movements, the slow food movement from Italy, the paleo movement, the Mediterranean diet, whatever you want to say. If you eat something that only has one ingredient, it doesn't need a label. So if you eat that, you're in a good space. Looking at nutrient timing is totally different, but just to simplify, just to give them one sentence, I would say eat foods without labels.
Excellent. Now, how do you define your approach to nutrition? Do you have a particular – so you mentioned paleo, Mediterranean style. Do you have a style that you primarily advocate? Or
honestly, I'm a Joshitarian. Like I don't really attach to – I kind of lean more towards the Paleolithic diet.
Yeah.
But I also think that can be flawed when you cross-reference it towards certain people's genetic predispositions.
Yeah.
So I think there's always ways to tweak. But what I do like about any diet at all that has this real food approach is that when you're getting real organic foods, you get these nutrients that are actually shuttled into your system where your body can get the nutrition it needs. I mean, you had Sean on your show, so let's reference this one more time. He's talked a lot about people that eat calories but are starving still. It's because they're not getting nutrients. So in my life, I try to just eat these foods without labels, and that's been the best thing I could ever imagine for my life. I mean, I went through a time where when I was a kid, I was eating things that I didn't even know that things had labels because I never even looked. So as an adult, as a trainer, I started becoming this expert label reader. And then I realized it's not even about the label. It's just about eating foods that don't have them.
Right. So the answer to the question, I think, is a real food approach. And I love that answer. I think that's great. And it's so funny because I think, the more I learn about nutrition, the more I feel about how individual it has to be. I mean, certainly there are principles that are universal, like eat whole foods that are minimally processed. But when it comes down to it, we're all individuals, and there's so many variables depending on genetic factors, on how someone is training, what their goals are. So it really has to be individualized. Do you agree with that?
And if it's not, then you might get something that works for a while, but this is the danger of not individualizing. I mean, there's three moving parts here. We have hormones, we have mindset, and then we also have just genetics and work capacity and everything that people can do with that. So in this triad of hormones and genetics, like, it's really important to not just attach to a way of eating. What worked 10 years ago isn't going to work 10 years later. I mean, you got to do a different approach based on your stress load at your age. I'll tell you, I'm 36. When I was 26, I could kind of do what I wanted to do. There wasn't really a big buffer there.
Sure.
But at 36, like, I get to be really mindful about what I'm eating and my stress load and things like that. So long answer to a short question is, I actually think that without individualization, we're setting people up for a lifelong battle with nutrition.
Absolutely. Talk about the mindset, because this is really interesting as well. So the emotional part, the psychology behind good eating, what are your thoughts or comments in regards to that?
I believe, in my opinion, that in my own life and in people that I've trained, it's the most important thing is understanding the link between stress and food. If you know yourself, and there's many ways to know yourself, I interviewed Gretchen Rubin on the podcast, and she has this phenomenal model she calls the four tendencies. Understanding who you are, having the self-awareness about what makes you tick, knowing your triggers, understanding what your stress responses are. That's the most important thing, because I'll tell you, if people ignore who they are and they just try to pound the hammer down and push the gas pedal down and less calories and lots of workouts and all these different things, I mean, you're rowing the boat in the wrong direction. From a hormonal perspective, we have to understand, as a human being, how do we deal with stress? What is our unique stress capacity for us? You know, what were we born with? What have we adapted to through epigenetics? How do we handle things that come into our bubble now? And how does the food play a role in that? You know, are we using food as a way to mash down this stress response, as a way to numb? It's really important to have those real conversations. I mean, those are the hardest conversations that I have with a client, because they've been, you know, training and doing all these things for years, but they're not dealing with the most important thing. And that is their mindset around why they do what they do. So, I mean, we could do a whole other show on that, Scott, you know, on mindset, man.
Let's drill down into that a little bit more, because I'm really interested in understanding that. So how do you help people identify the triggers? Is it all just the conversations and understanding eating patterns and stressors and things like that? How do you help people understand what sets them off, I guess?
What I've done is I've made a pretty healthy intake questionnaire. So I already get a good sense of who they are, kind of what they do and why they do it. And on that questionnaire, I figure out with some key questions to just understand what has worked for them in the past as far as getting rid of stress. How do they deal with stress now? What are their health habits? You know, obviously we take them through a Parcue form, but I want to understand more than just their injuries and predispositions. It doesn't matter to me if somebody has high cholesterol, if I know that probably they're still nursing a breakup from 5 years ago that they're angry about, and that's why they're eating too much. So it's really figuring out, and by the way, I'm not a doctor, I'm not a psychologist, but you know, I mean, in the training world, in the coaching world, we're kind of a jack of all trades. I mean, we support the medical system. When people go away from working with doctors, they come to a trainer or a wellness coach. And we have to know these things. We have to know kind of what's going on with people. So with this emotional piece, I think it's A, understanding what is this client's self-awareness? How aware of themselves are they? And when I say awareness, I mean their habits. Why they do what they do? Are they having certain behaviors that exist now from a nutrition perspective that are tied to previous loss, that are tied to pain, whatever it might be? And I'll tell you that because that was my life for a long time. So I'm very attuned to that. And I think that is something that is not discussed enough in the fitness industry. You know, it's one thing to train and eat correctly. It's another thing to dive into the stuff that's really scary.
Yeah. So it sounds like the questionnaire is really invaluable for you to really understand the people you're working with.
It is. And then there's a second piece though that involves me having these weekly touch points with my clients where, you know, this data, it's this great thing where I get to track people's data, but the data is just a mirror of how people are showing up. And so it's you and it's myself and the client. I always tell my clients, you know, it's you and me versus your data. It's you and I together trying to figure out how we can get these markers to be in the green or to be in alignment with your goal. And then what happens is, this is the beautiful thing, Scott, you know, what happens in these unique points is that when the data doesn't look good, that's when the client can open up to me, because then I'm not the bad guy anymore. I mean, what used to bother me so much about working in gyms is that I was with them 2 and 3 hours a week and they were paying me great money, but there was 160 plus hours during the week. I didn't know what the heck they were doing. Well, now I get to know. And now we get to have real conversations that are based on how these people are showing up. And that's what gives them kind of, I guess you could say, the safe space to tell me what's really going down. You know, was it a stressful week? You know, do we need to partition certain activities? Do we need to do meal prep on a different day? Do we need to figure out how you should use a calendar system in your life? You know, I mean, these are the things right, that are happening with real people, whether they be a strength proponent or not.
So I have some questions for you around habits, and we're going to get to that in a minute. Another question, since we're talking along these lines here with nutrition, that I wanted to ask you is, what are your thoughts on the rebound effect? And so you understand what I mean here. So someone is going, they've changed their diet, they've reduced calories or they've reduced a macronutrient, and then they'll go back to a regular eating pattern and they'll gain more weight than they started with. What are your thoughts and experiences with that? And maybe explanations for that.
Wow. This is such a big, you ask these big questions, right? We could spend whole episodes talking about these questions, but here's what I really like about this question. It's such a unique piece, because when people approach their eating differently, there's going to be changes that can be fairly quick, right? If they're inflamed and they start eating an anti-inflammation diet that's based on real foods, they're going to lose a ton of water weight and they're going to have a lot of happiness around that. But here's the thing. When people eat differently and they change the food that's going in, it's not necessarily addressing the mindset. you know, it's addressing the nutrient quality, which can give them excitement. But I think, and it's actually funny, I just saw an article about The Biggest Loser. You know, the article that was just posted about how like 90%, Scott, of the people that go on Biggest Loser, they gain all the weight back and then some. I think there was only like two people that kept it off, right? Did you see that?
I saw something like that. Yeah. Yeah.
And it goes to your question, because I think the way that we stop the weight gain from happening is that we lose it low and slow. We just take our time with it. I personally don't believe that it's healthy to lose more than a half a pound a week, or maybe even a pound at the maximum. Because what happens is that when people lose weight quickly, there's our resting metabolic rate. Every time you lose over 10 or 15 pounds or more, your resting metabolic rate drops. Resting metabolic rate being how many calories you can consume without moving at all. You know, some people's RMR can be 2000 calories a day. Some people's can be 2500 just based on their muscle mass and their age. But how we address this is by figuring out how can we take a client through a slow progression where they're not losing it fast. They're not going to lose, you know, 30 pounds in a month. But they're going to keep it off because, man, it's so incredibly stressful to the body to lose weight quickly. So I think the way that we prevent this rapid weight gain from happening is that we take our time with it, and we appreciate this process of letting go of weight as a journey, not some kind of destination where once you get there, your whole life's going to be okay. It might feel like that temporarily. And man, I went through that. You know, when I was 22, I lost 90 pounds up and down. The only thing that really addresses it is low and slow and the mindset piece.
Yeah, I love that. And really that philosophy, that approach, that low and slow, is really the same approach that we always talk about here on the podcast. I mean, that's my philosophy. My approach is to make, you know, these steady gains over time. Take a long-term approach to training, to strength, to movement, performance. And it's not about the fast results, the quick fix. You know, it's a process. It's a journey. It's a path you go down. So I love that. I mean, we're talking about the same thing here, whether you're talking about training, whether you're talking about nutrition. It's a process.
Absolutely. So yeah.
All right. Let's switch gears a little bit and talk about the habits that we were talking about earlier. So let me ask you, what are some of your daily success habits? What are the things that have to happen each day for you to have a successful and productive day?
This is a really unique question because, you know, I'm not sure if you're looking for something specific, like maybe a morning ritual or what I do throughout my day, but I'll tell you, the number one habit that has worked for me is mindfulness. Practicing daily mindfulness has been the only thing that has allowed me to move forward in life. And honestly, to just be a professional, you know, Scott, you're busy as well. I mean, unless we're tracking things, unless we're mindful about how we're showing up in the gym, with our families, in our life, with our health, it's really challenging with the speed of life to not just be able to take a breath. And I think that's been a big one for me. You know, now here's how I practice mindfulness. I use a device. It's called Muse. And it's a brain sensing, it's a meditation headband, and it tracks the quality and the quantity of how many times and how great I'm meditating. That's been a big one, you know, to be able to integrate meditation and use a device to track the quality of that meditation has been a big one. I also use silent alarms on my phone. Those are some things that allow me to take movement breaks. Movement breaks are key. I take a movement break between 12 and 2 every single day because it's what gives me some just uplift in my physiology for the rest of the day. That's been a big one, you know, and just having a calendar system that's tied to everything. So all my Mac products, you know, everything's tied to my phone. If it's in my phone, I'm doing it. If it's not, it's not going to be a habit. Right, right. So I've made a system where I'm doing those three things every day.
On average, how long is your daily meditation practice?
12 to 20 minutes, depending on the day. Love the 20 minute ones.
Okay.
Sometimes though, if you know, it's interesting because as you ask this question, I realize we're all looking for the golden template, aren't we? I mean, everyone's looking for the way to just lock it down and have it be perfect every day. Yeah. But listen, I mean, you're a dad. If your kids are up sick one night, you're probably not going to have a great morning because you're going to be a little fatigued.
Sure.
And so my life's the same way. You know, I have this template that I go off of, but it changes. So 12 to 20 minutes, depending on the day.
Excellent. Let me ask you about the movement breaks that you mentioned. So is this... Tell me again how you use your movement break, and then I want to ask a follow-up question about that.
So an alarm goes off my phone. I actually do it through the Fitbit application, and it reminds me to get outside and move. You know, I live next to a preserve, and so I can just pop out of my apartment here, and I just run in the reserve, or, you know, I'll go, there's a bench, and I can do some box jumps and some split jumps, and I can do some explosive push-ups, and that's all that I really need. I mean, movement breaks are are put in to do one thing, and that is to give you more energy, not to take it away. So that's what I do. It's about 10 minutes long, and that's been successful for me.
Okay. Just to share kind of what I do is every hour. So if I'm doing prolonged sitting, which I'm actually trying to do more standing now. As a matter of fact, I'm standing during doing this interview ever since.
Yeah, me too.
Cool, man. I had a recent interview with Kelly Starrett, and after reading his book, Deskbound, I decided, hey, man, I'm going to
start. I got to read that book, Scott.
Yeah, great book. Great book. Oh. But so that interview was the first interview I did standing, and ever since I'm doing all interviews in the standing position. But what I'm doing when I'm writing and things like that, and I do change positions. I talked about this during the interview as well. I have a standing station in my house that I can stand to do my computer work, my writing. But in my desk, I'm seated. So going back to the movement break is every hour I try to get up, walk around 5 to 10 minutes, and then if I am sitting, then I'll sit down again for another hour. So that's kind of why or how I use my movement break. So
that's so powerful, man. And everyone's definitely unique, right?
Yeah, totally. Totally. More on the habits. So habits are obviously very important. The more I learn about habits, I mean, it really is what shapes us. It's who we are. It allows us to be successful and to achieve the health and fitness goals that we want. What are the big advice or strategies you have for people that are listening to improve daily habits? Are there a couple things that people can do to improve their habits that you've
found? Yeah, you know, it does. There's a handful of great ones, and they all center around those pillars I was talking about. But I want to just say this as a caveat, you know, we really have to understand what people are looking for. I think everyone's looking for more energy, so we can talk about something there. I think everybody is looking to either maintain their health or let go of some old weight. And so when we look at habits and we integrate mindfulness, I'm thinking like really what would be of service to your audience. And these are people that are hard workers, you know, people that are, they have a lot of plates spinning. They have a lot of things going on. And I'm feeling like, you know, some of the best habits that are put into place is having a daily framework. Now, you notice I didn't say schedule, right? Because schedule is something that the work tends to put on people, or, you know, extraneous responsibilities puts on people. But having a framework is different because it allows a bit more flexibility. So I would suggest that a good thing for me is having three specific goals that you just accomplish every day. They might not happen at the same time every day, but they're going to happen no matter what. And the three goals for me are adequate exercise. So at some point during that day, I'm going to tick the box next to exercise. It's just something that I'm going to do. And every day when I wake up, I look at where I can plug that in, and I might shuffle some things around, but I do that. The next thing is, how am I going to actually integrate joy into my life? You know, it's one thing to be able to train and eat well, but without joy, without doing something fun during the day, even if it's for 30 minutes, right? It's going to be challenging to maintain a stress response. I think what happens to a lot of people is they get so overwhelmed and overworked that they're doing so much that there's just no time for them to integrate the joy. So I always try to integrate the joy. And then the last piece is doing something that's of service to other people, like one thing per day. How are you going to serve one other person without expecting a result? You're not going to get anything for it. You're just going to give to another person. And I think those three things have been the most powerful from a habit perspective.
That's excellent. I love it. I love the daily framework idea. The three goals, making it very simple. And then, of course, the question goes back that I asked about is really, you have to know what the primary goal is. So if you're going to develop habits, you kind of have to know what the goal is to develop the habits around. So
absolutely.
Awesome. Let me ask you this. Has there been anything big that you've learned in the last 6 to 12 months that have made a big difference for you and your approach to health and wellness?
Yeah. So for me, you know, I'm 36 years old and I grew up playing sports, a very kind of challenging situation. And there was not a lot of space for me to really express how I was feeling. And I'll tell you, the one thing that has been the most beneficial for me in my coaching practice, and honestly, just athletic performance as well, is learning the art of emotional intelligence. Emotional intelligence, you know, Brendon Burchard, it came up for me, Scott, when you had mentioned that you have these hourly breaks that you take. That's something that he talked about. I went to his high performance academy. This is a guy who's trained Oprah. He has worked with the top 50 companies in the world with their CEOs as a personal coach. And guess what his number one thing is that he proclaims as the only thing that'll allow people to move forward? It's emotional intelligence. It's understanding who you are, what you do, and why you do it. my emotional intelligence, my practice of being more present, of being more emotionally intelligent, emotional intelligence, meaning my ability to express how I'm feeling, if I'm angry, if I'm sad, if I'm not, whatever it might be. I mean, that has been the golden ticket for me.
Awesome. I love that. That is that's great insight. And Brendan, I'm familiar with his work, really amazing guy, brilliant thinker, super productive guy. Great book, by the way, his Motivation Manifesto. Highly recommend that book as well.
That is a good one.
So along those lines, you mentioned Brendan Burchard. So let me ask you this. Who have been the big influences on your career and where you are today?
Well, you know, in the beginning, it was Paul Cech. It was Juan Carlos Santana. You know, it was all the kind of traditional fitness and wellness gurus. And, you know, I'll always have homage to them. You know, I actually got to work with Juan Carlos for a week at his intensive. In 2008, I went to Boca Raton and I spent time at IHP. And then, you know, I got to work in the Czech facility and take courses there. Those were two really powerful people that I got to learn from. But now I'll tell you, in the fitness technology space, it's a guy named Brian O'Rourke. Brian O'Rourke in the fitness industry, he's the president of the Fitness Industry Technology Council. And that is a guy that I really consider to be an influencer and somebody that I learned from.
So, well, let me go back to Juan Carlos Santana. He's a guy, actually, IHP is about a half hour away from where I live. Never been there, but...
You got to go, man. He's got such a great gym.
I met Juan about 2 years ago at a sports nutrition conference, and great guy. I got to reach out to him. He's literally right here.
I think he still works with Jose Antonio, right?
Yeah, I think he does. Yep. Another great guy that's right here. He's even closer.
See, Florida, you guys are the East Coast connection for the health and nutrition world.
Yeah. I just had some communications with Jose actually in the past couple of days. So, but anyway, let me ask you this. If you could spend one day with anybody in the industry or as a professional where you could just soak up all their knowledge, who would you spend it with and what would you hope to learn from that experience?
And specifically in the health and fitness industry or just any industry?
Let's keep it to the health and fitness industry. Yeah.
Okay. I would honestly love to spend an entire day with Paul Cech. That would be amazing because this is a guy. I mean, I don't even know what his age is. I think he's almost 60 and he's got an 8-pack and he's super mobile and he's healthy and he's highly intelligent. He's impacted hundreds of thousands of lives in the industry. And that would be a guy that I think I would get a lot of value from just in being around his energy and just learning how he lives would probably help me out a lot.
Excellent. All right. Let me go back. Let me take several steps back. And this is a question I actually wanted to ask from the very beginning. I kind of glazed over this question. So how do you define wellness? What exactly is wellness to you?
Man, I love this because this is a question that I ask on my podcast. And wellness to me is real abundance in our body, our mind, and our spirit. You know, it's this holy trinity, this triad of connection where if our mind is exactly firing the way we want it to fire, and there's a lot of ways to support that, if our body is strong and it's mobile and we can do what we want to do physically, and if spiritually we're fully expressed, we have a connection to a higher power, and we understand that this world is not just about us and what we get out of it, and we're doing things for other people, that's wellness. You know, wellness is abundance when you have all those three buckets full.
And what's the best way to really, you might have already said this, but let's recap it. How do you best describe your approach to what you do?
My approach is to fall back on 10 years of being a trainer in gyms and use all that knowledge and all of the execution that I had with clients for so long to then now take this to the virtual capacity where I get to see how clients show up from the device that they're wearing on their body. And it gives me the ways that they eat, the ways that they sleep, and the ways that they exercise and the ways they hydrate. And when I have that as a coach, that's when I can really help people on a weekly basis move the needle on their goal.
Excellent. So it really goes back to that four pillars that you've talked about here during the session.
Yeah. I mean, without those full, it's really challenging, Scott, for people to, if any one of those are neglected, they're going to pull away from the other three. Period.
Now, this might be a tough question, but is there a single most important thing you do to optimize health for most people?
I would say it's honestly mindfulness. And mindfulness is something that encompasses all four of those. There's many ways to help people practice mindfulness. Listen, I mean, even in the strength capacity, right? If someone's not tracking their strength workouts, they're not being mindful. Mindfulness does not have to be an airy-fairy granola explanation. Mindfulness is just something where you're just paying attention to how you're showing up. And I think mindfulness is the biggest piece for all people.
So mindfulness, and you've talked a lot about the mindset. So it really, I think it's psychology, mindset is just an integral part of your approach and how you help people, how you help your clients.
100%, man. I mean, you know, wellness force, we're all born with wellness. We all have this energy source, this force inside of us. I mean, this is the piece that I get to help people with, because that's the piece that I really didn't get a lot of help with when I was a kid. So there's a tie in there with me. I think that we all get to show up very well. We all get to show up powerfully. We all get to be this person that we're striving to be. But in order for us to do that, we can't do it alone. You know, people listen to your podcast because they want to receive information that'll help them on the journey, but they're connecting with you, Scott. You know, they're connecting with me. They want to get the things they can get from other human beings. You can't just get everything you need from reading. You can't get it from listening right. to audiobooks. It takes real human connection to drive better results.
So your website is wellnessforce.com. Tell us what people can find there who haven't checked out your website. And really, where do they start? That's really an important question that I like to ask everybody. So we all have great websites that we feel they're great websites. Where do people start when they land on a website? So where do people start when they go to your site, Josh?
Yeah. So there is a button right on the site. You can download a free guide. Now, this guide is talking about the different apps and devices that can help you from a weight loss perspective. I do have another guide if you sign up for my email list, where we talk about what kind of devices can really move the needle for people that are interested in lean body mass, if you're trying to put on lean muscle. And those two are linked right on the homepage. There's also a link if you want to just have a 15-minute consultation with me. You can do that. And that floats on every single page on the website.
Nice. So people can arrange a 15-minute consult just to talk about their health and challenges and things like that?
Yeah. I mean, because at the end of the day, if anything I said resonates with you and the things that I talked about give you some kind of excitement about your goal, I mean, trust that feeling. You know, reach out to me. Let's talk about why you got excited about it.
Nice. Now, you're a podcaster as well. Tell us about your show and who should check out Wellness Force Podcast.
Well, this is fun because, you know, I'm about to interview you. So, you know, all the audience needs to come over to Wellness Force Radio. It's Wellness Force Radio on iTunes. Right. Now, the reason that I have people that are on the show from all different walks of health and wellness is because there's two things that we focus on, and that's wellness technology and then behavior change. So anytime someone comes on the show, we always bring it back to those two things.
Nice. All right, is there any big guest that you would recommend that people check out? Anything that you've done recent that if they haven't checked out your show, they gotta hear this particular interview?
Well, you know, they should listen to them all because they're all great.
Yeah, but I say the same thing. Yep, absolutely.
One of the best ones for me that just sparked a lot of questions and a lot of action on my part was the interview with Gretchen Rubin. Now, she's a number one New York Times bestselling author. She wrote Better Than Before. So that'd be probably a great place to start. If you're looking for more of a S&C perspective, you know, you want to learn about somebody there. We have an interview with Joel Jameson from, he has his heart rate training, heart rate variability system. So those are two that I really like. But, you know, if you're going to start somewhere, I mean, start with the Gretchen Rubin episode.
Excellent. So let me ask you this. What's the one book that you recommend the most to others and why that book?
I recommend David Deida's book. And David Deida wrote a book. It's called The Way of the Superior Man. And this is for anyone. I mean, whether it's strength or business or personal life, maybe you want to have a better relationship with your wife. This is a guy who really has the acumen to show men how they can show up more powerfully. Because powerfully showing up in the gym is awesome, but so is powerfully showing up at home and being able to fully express yourself.
Excellent. Now, I seem to remember one of my guests, and I think it may have been Chris Duffin that recommended that book. I'm not 100% sure, but
it's a great book.
But I think it might have been Chris that recommended that book as well. And that's a book that I have not purchased yet. So I'll have to put that one on my list for sure. And that book will go on a big stack of books that I'm currently reading.
In the queue.
In the queue. That's right. That's right. So this has been fantastic, man. Really enjoyed it. The big question that I like to ask as we close things down is, what's the one big thing? What's something actionable that everybody can take away from our interview session here today?
Understand your self-awareness. Know who you are, what you do, and why you do it. And if there's a lack of clarity there, it's just a beacon to how you get to put down energy there in the first place. So really understanding who you are, you know, why you do the things that you do can make the difference beyond any execution, any strength lift, any diet program you go on. You know, start exploring who you are.
So I think that kind of goes back to knowing your why. I mean, understanding who, but then understanding the why behind it. And it really goes back to really the theme of what we've been talking about here. And that is the mindset, the psychology. So great closing advice. Again, Josh, this has been fantastic. Your website is wellnessforce.com. Thank you so much. Guys, thanks for joining us this week. Be sure to take action and apply something you learned from this week's show. And we'll see you next time on the Ardella Training Podcast. Thanks, Josh.
Thanks, man.
Hey, guys. Thanks for listening to the podcast this week. And if you'd like to become part of the Ardella Training community, be sure to go to ardellatraining.com/join to get your free training mistakes guide, which contains 12 critical training mistakes I made through the years. I know this 36-page guide will save you time and frustration and accelerate your training results. And it's free. You'll get that and so much more at ardellatraining.com/join. Hope to see you there.